Bitches on Comics listeners, it is I, one of your hosts, Sarah Century. Usually there are other hosts, but not today. We love them very much. Shout out to Monica and Essie at the top of the hour. But fortunately, it's not just me talking this whole hour. I actually have a guest today. So I would love it if you would introduce yourself to the listeners.
Sure. Hi. My name is also Sarah, but with an H. I'm Sarah Kuhn. I write a lot of things, mostly books and comics. I'm probably best known for a series called Heroin Complex, which is a series of novels about Asian American superheroines. I've also written some YA rom-coms, I Love You So Mochi and From Little Tokyo with Love. And in the comics world, I have written quite a few things, probably best known for my two graphic novels with DC, Shadow of the Batgirl, which was about Cassandra Cain, who is the Asian Batgirl. And this title is really long and I always put it in the wrong order, but it is Girl Taking Over, a Lois Lane story, which is about a sort of reimagined biracial Asian American version of a teenage Lois Lane making it in the big city. And I've written some other things. I've written some Barbie comics. I wrote some Clueless comics. I actually wrote some comics about the Archie gang as like kids, like children. And then the thing I think we are going to talk most about is one of my latest projects, which is a one-shot for Archie about Darla Lang, who is also known as Darkling.
Yes. So while you were giving your incredibly impressive resume, I was thinking, first of all, I forgot about the Lois book, which is so, I'm expressing pain because I love Lois. This is like my favorite character, like one of my top 10s. So I want to talk more about Lois, but also I was like, oh, right. Yes. I just remembered another thing that I did read, which was the Clueless comic. Mm-hmm. So yes, we're fortunate to have guests on that have done enough work that I'm like, I know I will discover and rediscover their work, you know, throughout my life, which is my very favorite thing. I love it when you can just kind of like grow with the writer or something like that. I don't know if that makes sense.
Sure.
Yeah. But like, I always love to kind of be able to like jump in and jump out and then be like, right, yes, I forgot about the Lois book. Now I'm going to read that. That's immediately has to go on my queue because I just totally spaced it. So much going on in the world. But yeah. I wanted to say that the place that I actually first heard you was a podcast. It was the Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men episode that talked about Betsy Braddock.
Yeah, that's right. Psylocke.
Yes, a pretty wild episode. Of course, like not to dive too deep into that right now because you do already. But I just wanted to tell people if they wanted to check that out. I know we have a lot of X-Men fans that listen to the podcast that also listen to Jay and Miles. If you happen to miss that episode, it's a really great one. It was like kind of the one that I would send people for a long time if I was like, yeah, if you want to get like a good vibe of this show. Like they're kind of tackling stuff that, you know, needs to be tackled, I guess. And I think that that's like pretty consistent on that show.
Yeah, that was a really fun experience.
Yeah. I can only imagine. It was a good one to listen to for sure. And I wanted to say too, you've worked in so many different kind of worlds, right? Like you've you have created your own universes, of course. And then you've done a lot of superhero comics and stuff like that. And a lot of your superhero comics are just great. Like I know that a ton of people really love Shadow of the Batgirl. So yeah, I guess like just to kick things off, I'd love to hear a little bit more about all of the superhero comics that you've worked on, because of course, Heroin Complex. And then what's kind of the difference between working, like obviously creating your own and being in control of the universe, and then something like Shadow of the Batgirl, where you're kind of like, you know, or Lois Lane, you know, where you're kind of reimagining these characters that have a lengthy history behind them. Because if I remember correctly, Cassandra Cain is introduced in the 90s. And that's a lot of stories. So
yeah, you know, it's always fun. I think both sort of those kinds of processes are interesting, different, have some places where they cross over. with Heroin Complex, which was my own universe, and those are prose novels rather than comic books, but I like to think they're sort of written in a style where you can imagine, you know, pretty easily what is happening. You can sort of make a comic book in your mind. They have things like sound effects and just ridiculous scenarios. And with those books, we were also lucky enough to have a great cover artist, Jason Chan, who really brought to life from the first book. I mean, the first book, he chose the opening scene, which is the two heroines having a battle with these demonic cupcakes. And he just brought it to, I mean, that's such a ridiculous premise, but he just brought it to life so beautifully. And, you know, I think with those books, it's sort of interesting because they were very influenced by what I had loved to read when I was growing up, which was fantasy and sci-fi and superhero comics. I loved the X-Men. I was very, I think, into them because they were a superhero team who was just as concerned with talking about like their feelings and their sort of interpersonal dramas as they were with like battling these like literally world-ending foes. So I always thought that was great. That appealed to probably the angsty tween that I was. And, you know, writing those books, I think that I wanted to kind of write something that reminded me of things I had grown up reading and loving like that, but that also sort of focused a little more on the mundane side of superheroing. You know, like one of my big influences with that series was an X-Men issue called Ladies' Night, which is actually the first appearance of Jubilee. And, you know, the main story is about some of the ex-ladies going to the mall and, like, you know, getting their hair done and trying on shoes and just kind of bonding. And I always thought that was really fun. So those were definitely big influences when I developed that series. And sort of like what that series became was a chance for me to write those kind of fun, poppy, ridiculous stories focused on Asian American women, which I had not seen a lot of. And I wanted to kind of, you know, spotlight the girls who look like me, who I'm friends with, who, you know, had grown up loving these stories, but maybe didn't see themselves very much in them. And then as far as developing licensed characters, that's kind of always fun because, you know, you're playing with someone else's toys. You're sort of given different guidelines or different suggestions. Obviously, you can't. There are things that you probably can't do. But I think with both Shadow of the Batgirl and Lois Lane, I was really lucky enough to work with some wonderful teams that gave me a lot of freedom. My editor on both of those books was Sarah Miller. She's incredible. She's very collaborative. And, you know, I felt like with her and the artists on those books, Batgirl was Nicole Gu, Lois was Arielle Jovellanos. We just had a fantastic time sort of envisioning, like, well, what do our versions of these characters look like? What do we want to delve into with them? What kind of stories do we want to tell? And I think for me, Lois was particularly fun because she is one of my favorite characters. and, you know, she's probably most of the reason why I became a journalist. You know, I'm no longer a journalist, but that was what I wanted to do for a long time. And I think she was a big influence on that. And so, you know, with a character like that, who's been around for so long, we had a lot of discussions about, you know, obviously this is a new modern version of her. It is an Asian American version of her. It is a teenage version of her. It is her that is just kind of starting out in the world, and we're sort of showing her fall in love with journalism. She doesn't necessarily start at that point. So we had a lot of talks about what is sort of the essential DNA of that character. And I think for me, it was that one, she really refuses to be a sidekick. You know, she kind of always puts herself in the center of the story. I always thought you know, the Christopher Reeve Superman movies, which were sort of one of my entry points to loving superheroes, I always thought she was the main character in the first two movies because you're sort of discovering she's the human, right? Like she's kind of our POV into the story. She is the one who's discovering Superman while we discover Superman. Mm-hmm. So I always thought she was the main character. And I think that was kind of an energy that we took to our Lois. And then the other thing I always thought was that, you know, she just has this really tenacious drive to find the truth and expose the truth. And she kind of won't stop no matter what. I mean, I just rewatched Superman 2, and that whole beginning sequence is her like basically climbing the Eiffel Tower by herself, even though it's obviously a terrible idea because she's trying to get a story. And so I think those two things were just things we really tried to keep centered. But then also, obviously, we had our own ideas of, you know, what is Lois Lane now? What is this version of Lois Lane who has kind of grown up in a very specific way, is influenced by very specific things, and is sort of learning, you know, why it's important to tell the truth or expose the truth or get into ridiculous situations because you're trying to get a story. So I think for me, both of those sort of development like stages are very fun and can be a little bit different. But in both cases, I think we're always, or I'm always like, if I'm working by myself, if I'm working with a team, is trying to find, you know, what is the sort of true central essence of that character and how can we best focus on it?
Yes. So if you go back to even like the early Lois stories, right, like Superman is just clearly the sidekick. If you look at like the Lois and Clark series from the 90s, I actually still really like that series because I think that they're very clear, right, that like, he's the sidekick. It's all right. It's for the best.
Yeah. I mean, and I think, you know, again, she is like the human. She's the one that's sort of like discovering him as we are. She's always trying to get the story of Superman. She's always trying to kind of not expose him, but she just, you know, she has the suspicions and she's always trying to figure it out. So I think like
she gets
for
the
me anyway,
scoop, right?
Yeah, she was the one I kind of related to.
Yeah, definitely. And I wanted to say, too, that line of DC Comics, the graphic novels, where it's like you did the Lois Lane, the Shadow of the Batgirl, I believe, there, too. And then Daniel Page did the Mira comic. Mm-hmm. There was the Harley Quinn Breaking Glass, like Poison Ivy Thorns. These are all really incredible stories. So even just kind of the way that it's kind of unwound for me as a reader is that every single time one of those pops up, and even if I hadn't heard about it yet, I can always pick it up and know it's going to be just killer. So have you enjoyed a lot of the other stuff that's on that line at all?
Oh, yeah. I think so. That line is, I think it's called DC Young Readers. It's a great line. I think it's really fun to sort of see all of these reimaginings of very classic legacy characters, especially for readers who are maybe a little bit younger and, you know, are interested in the characters, but don't really know where to start. You know, I think comics can be very intimidating. There's so much history. There's so much continuity. A lot of times you don't know where the entry point is. And so these stories, I think, give a really nice, you know, self-contained story that there's really no barrier. You don't need to have read anything before. I think you could read the Lois Lane book without even knowing who Lois Lane is. I feel like you could still enjoy it. But if you do know who Lois Lane is, then, you know, hopefully that gives you a little extra something while you're reading. But yeah, I'm a big proponent of bringing new readers into comics and into sort of the enjoyment of these characters that have been around for so long. So I love both writing those stories and reading them.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that's kind of it, too, is like I definitely grew up reading comics in, you know, the early mid 90s and stuff. And so being in like kind of a rural place, I know that I was like the only person I knew that like loved comics on the level that I did. So it's always nice for me, too, especially whenever somebody, you know, anybody who's younger or anybody who's just like, I know someone who's younger, what comic should I get them? And it's just like, check it out. DC just made a whole line for you all. Yeah. So, and it's like, what's great about it is it's for me as well. I enjoy those comics a lot. I wanted to jump ahead too, because like I said, you've done so many things. So there's definitely a wealth of things to discuss here. But I wanted to talk about the Dr. Aphra novel because it's just my favorite character. I just love her so much. I have both of the omnibuses upstairs right now, and they're like so huge. They're so huge. If you had a boat, you could probably use one as an anchor, just how big they are. But it's great to have that much Aphra content. But the novel that you wrote, I listened to it as an audiobook, and I just want to totally tell people, maybe check that out, because the sound effects and everything were just so, so good. And it accentuated a lot of the writing just so well. And I loved the voice actor. I loved every part of it. So I wanted to talk to you about that. You know, you mentioned being into X-Men for a long time. So was it like, because I love the Star Wars, like the extended universe stuff, probably more than I love the main universe, which is like perhaps controversial to say, but I love it so much. I come at it as a genuine fan. So I wanted to ask just kind of, what is it like to work on Star Wars? And for a character like Dr. Aphra, who's like, is just kind of extended universe right now, right? Because it's like in continuity of the, all of the Marvel comics and stories, right, are like in continuity. But at the same time, like, it, you know, she hasn't made it to the big screen yet and all of that.
Right. No, it's so cool. I mean, I was also a big Star Wars kid. That first trilogy is, I think, part of my nerd DNA, part of my creative DNA. And I think no matter how jaded you are, no matter how long you've been in the industry, I feel like there is really nothing like getting that call that it says, you know, we want you to work on Star Wars. There's really no other franchise like that. So it was so cool just to get that call. And it felt like kind of a special bonus that it was Aphra, because I think she is probably just one of the coolest characters in the Star Wars universe. I feel like there is no one like her. There is no one who has that voice. There is no one who has that sort of just sense of chaos. And so I was a little bit intimidated, but I just knew she would be incredibly fun to write. And that was actually written as what I think is called an audiobook original. So it was like basically recorded like an audio drama. You know, it wasn't sort of just one narrator the way that an audiobook is often recorded. It was a full cast. They had, like you said, the sound effects, the music, all of that. Our Aphra was Emily Wu Zeller, who is an amazing voice actress and audiobook narrator. And she has actually narrated most of my audiobooks. She did the whole Heroin series. She did From Little Tokyo. And she did Aphra, and I think she's incredible. I think she was the perfect Aphra. And actually, a lot of that, I was hired to do that near the end of 2019. And so it was recorded in early 2020. And usually those were recorded, you know, in person in a studio, very traditional.
Right.
In that case, that one had to be recorded all over Zoom, like all virtually. And I thought, because of that, the performances just impressed me even more. I cannot tell that they were not in the same room together. I think it sounds, you know, very seamless. The chemistry is great. I really love the way it turned out. But yeah, it was just so cool. It was so fun to write in her voice. It was fun to write these very classic characters that I grew up with, you know, having your dialogue appear next to the name Princess Leia is pretty incredible. And I just had a really great time with that. And she's still a character that is one of my favorites that I feel, you know, so honored that I got to write. And I hope that she will continue having adventures in a variety of mediums. And, you know, I think that there is a very big fan base for her. So I'm just happy I got to contribute a little bit to that.
Yeah, for sure. Those omnibuses, there's been so many issues of her comic at this point. If they announce a new Star Wars, anything, basically, I'm like, not Aphra? Like, are you sure? Like, maybe pull that one out, because it's going to be good. Like, everybody loves this character. And, you know, one of the characters where it's like, yes, this comic is amazing. But as I said, That is such a good story. I loved just sitting and listening. And there were so many just like laugh out loud moments for me. And that just doesn't happen to me a lot whenever I'm listening to a book or something, you know? So I was just like, I would be on the bike path, just like chuckling to myself and, you know, probably looking a little weird. But it was just so, so entertaining. So I, you know, personal thanks personally, because it's just like, I absolutely loved it.
Hey everybody, earlier today I made myself a sandwich and I thought to myself, if I could rate and review this sandwich, I would give it 5 stars. And I would say, this sandwich is so incredible, is best sandwich I've had literally in days. And it was everything I wanted it to be. And that would be a positive review. That would help me see what audience responses were to my sandwich. And, you know, it would just be really a helpful system. I wonder if there's another situation where rating and reviewing would come in handy. Oh,
huh.
Oh my God. No, what? You could rate and review this podcast, and then that helps us find our audience, and it helps us find whatever we've lost. It helps us find what we've lost.
Helps us find our socks, our keys, our cell phone. People don't talk about it enough. When you rate and review, it really changes someone's life.
Yeah, it's going to change my life, that's for sure. And we like to read the reviews, you know, the ones that are positive, that say soothing and nice things.
5 stars. We'll give you 5 stars as a listener. You give us 5 stars as a podcast.
5 sandwiches. This podcast, let's face it, is 5 delicious sandwiches.
Not like spoiling anything by telling me about. And then, yeah, do you have a Star Wars character that you would love to write the most?
You know, that's a good, I don't really know. I think I've always been happy when something's come to me. I have had the opportunity to pitch on a lot of characters in different, you know, at different publishers. And
sure.
I think sometimes when it's a character you really love, it's almost more of a challenge. It feels a little bit more intimidating, but I did get the chance a little earlier this year to write 2 of my favorite X-Men characters, Jean Grey and Emma Frost. And it was a story that was in one of the anthology issues called, I think it's Marvel Voices. And it was an anthology that was dedicated to the X-Men. So it was a bunch of different creative teams working on the X-Men. And I think the story I pitched was like, I pitched a couple things, and this one was honestly so ridiculous. I was just happy the editor, Lauren, was up for it. But the story is basically, and it's really short, I think it's like 6 pages. They have to do a team building exercise as part of the Krakoa Quiet Council. And so they have to go to this like summer festival, like carnival thing in Central Park. And they have to complete all these challenges without using their powers. And it's things like they have to ride like a roller coaster. They have to like eat some like disgusting, like fair food without like puking. They have to like play one of those carnival games. And of course, something else happens so that it kind of disrupts their plans. But spoiler alert, they do complete the team building exercise. And that was kind of just born out of my desire to, you know, focus on like the bond between those characters that honestly had nothing to do with Cyclops. I always felt like they should be, you know, not necessarily besties, but that they could have like an interesting bond because they have kind of similar powers. They have occupied similar positions where they've sort of been on, you know, both the bad and the good side of different conflicts. They have very powerful personalities. And so I just wanted to write something where like they got to kind of have some bonding moments, but also have these sort of like ridiculous, you know, over the top situations that they have to deal with. So that story was a ton of fun. And when we were working on it, it just kept getting more and more ridiculous. The artist was Jorge Corona, and he did such an amazing job of illustrating just this like ridiculous scenario. So that was a lot of fun to do. And those were two characters that, you know, were definitely favorites that I didn't know if I would ever get to write. So I was really happy that I had the opportunity to do that.
Oh, yeah. I actually hadn't heard of this. And now I'm like, oh, no, I have to go get that. Also, those voices collections are incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like just another really cool thing that, you know, you've... Because like the whole line is just awesome. All of the ones I've picked up, I've always been like, yes, this was great. I'm glad I put this on my pull list. And so everybody check those out just in general. Because there's at this point, you know, I'm pretty sure I have at least like three of, you know, so there's, you know, it's a lot of good stuff coming out on those lines. And a lot of that exact kind of vibe of story where it's like, I always kind of wanted to write this character, you know, and I love those. Those are my favorites. That's kind of where you get like the parts that they don't show in the main books, right? It's like you get to have these little side stories where you're like, yes, this is what I always wanted. It's like the X-Men classic backups or whatever, where Claremont just filled out the back, like the story a little bit more, and you're just like, yes, these are the best parts.
No, that's definitely kind of like what a lot of the stories in that anthology were like. And the X-Men one is a lot of fun. So definitely check that out.
Oh, yeah, I have to. Yeah, I'm surprised I don't already have it. I might actually already have it somewhere. I'm going to have to look through my book collection. But yeah, all right. So, you know, speaking of iconic franchises, we have the Archieverse here, which is now called the Archieverse since Riverdale did that multiverse episode. It's like, this is high key, like the Archie podcast at this point, because we're always getting really cool stuff from Archie. And I just have always loved Archie. And I'm, you know, just from what I know of you and what you've mentioned so far about, you know, your history of, you know, reading and getting into, you know, nerd stuff as a kid, I'm going to assume that you have a history with like the Archie Digest, maybe.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was growing, you know, my brother and I growing up, we were big comics kids. And, you know, there were all like, we grew up in a really small town. There was always this like spinner rack at the grocery store. We would make our parents like buy stuff for us from, and we were kind of equally into superheroes like X-Men and Superman and Archie. We had a lot of Archie, just like we had single issues. We had the digest. Those were also in the supermarket. I still have a soft spot for, there was this like Veronica solo series for a while where every issue she would go to a different country. Like, I think the first issue she goes to France. And so
I think I actually remember.
Yeah, it was really good. It was like Veronica, but she was like, you know, the globe-trotting heiress that she is. And she was always in these like glamorous locations, like wearing a lot of cool clothes and like doing different things. Me and my brother were both very into like all of those comics. And I remember like I always wanted to, I also loved Katie Keene. Like I always wanted to like contribute one of those fashions that they had on. They would always have a page in Katie Keene that was like, oh, this outfit was submitted by so-and-so. This outfit was like designed by so-and-so. And so you could actually like send in your like outfit drawings and they would like put them in the comic. And I never actually did it, but that was like one of my dreams. Like I always wanted to contribute like a Katie Keene outfit. I was very into Archie as well, and that was another fun franchise to get approached about.
Oh yeah, definitely. And the fashion pages that you're talking about, that's huge. It's come up on this podcast probably like three times because it was one of my favorite aspects of it too. So I'm always like, do you remember whenever they had the fashion pages? And people are like, yeah I guess so. I did an interview with the Tim Hanley, who wrote the book Betty and Veronica, Riverdale's Leading Ladies. And yeah, that was just an incredible conversation. Listeners, go check it out. It's available for everybody on the Patreon, free to listen. But also, yeah, with Archie, it's like we've had a lot of people who have done Archie stories because they're, you know, one of the publishers that you're just seeing all of this really excellent like outreach, people who are like, you know, they're like finding new creators to work with all of the time, it feels like. And so it's always great to like, I never know what's going to come at me from Archie. And every time I'm just like, yes, yes, like this is what I want. And very much the same with this comic. So I haven't read very far into Darkling because I think like we only had the first issue available, right? But I have been able to enjoy it a little bit. So I wanted to talk about this. First of all, this is a character that hasn't been around since like the 80s, right? If I'm not misunderstanding that. And then,
she has appeared in some shorts, I think, last year that were sort of, you know, Archie and the gang. Like there is one where like she goes on a date with Archie and he takes her to the beach and like she's like super goth. She's not really a beachy person. Right. So there's like, you know, hilarity ensues. There's another one. Like my favorite is one where she actually teams up with Sabrina, the teenage witch, and they take on a Nethric portal, which is also something we used in this one shot because I just thought that was such a fun concept. So she's come back a little bit. But I guess like as far as longer stories, maybe hasn't been featured in those in a while.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, this is another one, I guess, where it's like you are, I'm guessing, able to kind of be like, well, this is my version of it, kind of update the character a little bit. Obviously, like, you know, you just now telling me that there's other stories that have done a little bit of groundwork. But I would love to hear more about the process and this character, because I, you know, as somebody like you, who read tons of Archie comics like throughout my childhood, growing up, today, you know, all of the time, this morning. I have, you know, such a fondness for a lot of the kind of extended universe characters, I guess, where it's like, you know, you don't see necessarily on like the main books or something like that. But I think a lot of the Archie horror and a lot of the stuff that Archie's doing right now has really like just been able to give a spotlight to a lot of those characters. So yeah, I mean, I will just love to hear more.
So, you know, I think I mentioned I had written a little bit of Archie. I had written a couple of these kind of middle grade graphic novels about younger versions of Betty and Veronica and the gang as they're starting middle school. But this was the first time I had written anything in the sort of, I guess, main Archieverse. The graphic novels were licensed to another publisher by Archie, but this was for, I guess, Archie proper, Archie Direct, whatever that's called. And I was approached by our great editor, Jamie Rotante.
Right.
And you know, we've been doing these one shots, like here are some of the one shots. And we want to do a one shot about Darla Lang, who is Darkling. So Darkling, aka Darla Lang, basically, she's a young woman. She has this kind of mysterious connection to the supernatural world. And that mainly manifests in her sort of weapon or magical artifact of choice, which is this voluminous black cape that she wears everywhere that can also be used as a melee weapon. So when she's in battle, she can like wrap things or people up in the cape and like teleport them elsewhere. And it's just, you know, it's such a fun, like interesting power. And it also means she has to wear the cape everywhere. So it's sort of the perfect, you know, talking about fashion pages, it's sort of the perfect combination of like magic and fashion. And so I thought that was really fun. And the story was somewhat open, but I think what Jamie said was they were interested in maybe a story where she was in college and, you know, perhaps there were some students in danger and she had to kind of act to save them. And it was still open in that she was like, you know, it could also be in high school if you think that's better. It's sort of open, but we are interested in this kind of modern interpretation of Darkling as a young woman. So I thought that was really interesting. I thought that there were definitely things I could do with that. And so what we ended up developing is a story where Darla Lang, she's a young woman in college, and we sort of made it a little dark academia. So it's a very like haunted looking college. There's lots of big stately buildings with kind of gothic architecture. Everything's always in shadows. It's next to this like creepy forest. Like, I sort of imagined it being in the Pacific Northwest, which is where I'm from, which is, has very like atmospheric, you know, creepy academic settings. Like, there's a lot of those. So, so we put it in that setting. And then the sort of basic idea is Darla, you know, she has this cape, but she doesn't really understand it. She doesn't really understand her power. It's, she mostly sees it as, it's something that has always isolated her from others. It's the reason that she's alone. It's the reason that people are afraid of her. She doesn't really have a lot of, well, she doesn't really have any like important human connections in her life. So she has come to this school, which is called Ivy Hollow University, in order to sort of find a solution to separate herself from the cave. She's heard this college, you know, it has maybe some connections to magic. It has maybe some creepy hidden passageways and libraries that perhaps contain some magical books that she can use to figure out, you know, how do I separate myself from this cape so that I can have friends and lead a normal life and, you know, not have to deal with whatever this is. And of course, you know, this story is about how she ultimately embraces her power and accepts it and realizes that it's actually really cool. And the kind of like story underneath is she finds out about this series of students that have gone missing that, like her, are on the fringes of campus, are not really, you know, the popular kids or the kids that everybody knows about. They're sort of like on the outside of things. And they've been disappearing and no one cares. And so she teams up with someone else who's kind of on the fringes of campus society, this podcaster named Phoebe, and they investigate what has happened. And, you know, a lot of this is just like stuff that I really like to write. It's dark, atmospheric, witchy. There's like supernatural stuff. There's a lot of creepy visuals. There's a lot of great fashion. And then Darla is a young woman who is figuring out who she is, figuring out how to kind of accept all parts of her, figuring out how to really accept her power, celebrate her power, realize that it's actually a really cool thing. And yeah, that's pretty much it. That's a very compact story that we told in 20 pages. And the artist is Carla Borelli, who is amazing. She really got all of those sort of like gothic flourishes. And like, I sent like a really detailed fashion brief that mentioned the craft, the original craft. Also, also like all of those old like gothic suspense novels where it's like, it's always like a woman in like a long dress, like running away from something.
Running from a castle.
It's usually a castle, or sometimes there's like a ghost behind her or something. So I think I said I wanted to be like a cross between those two things. And I felt like she brought it to life like so beautifully. Like, we have a whole, you know, I mentioned the Netherick portal earlier. Like, we have a whole like Netherick portal page, like, she did an amazing job on. And then we also did have a little, you know, Darkling, because Darkling looks a little bit different than Darla. She had to have sort of her like magical girl transformation sequence. So that was also something that I just thought Carola did an amazing job on.
Yes. Okay. So I was curious too, because whenever you have Darkling, like, there is obviously, there's a, like a magical side to a lot of the Archie stuff, especially more so now, right, with all of the horror line. But even whenever like Sabrina first started back in the 60s, I remember reading, like, I specifically hunted down like the first Sabrina story. And that story is very much like, and she's a modern witch now. Instead of a broom, she has a vacuum cleaner.
Yeah.
Like that kind of stuff, which is like, you know, fun and very of the time. But I was interested because Sabrina has such like this, not always, but, you know, something like the TV series where it's like, I'm just an ordinary girl, but I'm also a witch. And you see her and you see like somebody who is like, you know, looks like any teen girl, I guess, as far as like dress style and like all of this. So having like the cape and then having that be a big part of the story is like kind of fascinating, right? Because it's like the other like the other one is like, oh, I'm just so like normie, I guess.
And
having someone be like, I wish I could be normie is kind of an interesting, I guess, twist. Were you thinking a lot, I guess, just about like kind of the magic world as it exists already in Archie, or like, was this kind of your chance? Because as you say, it's like this interesting like location, dark academia, gothic romance inspired, you know, like all of this kind of stuff. And so I was curious if like the other Archie stuff like kind of played a role into it as well.
I think we were kind of trying to give Darla her own like little universe, I guess. These sort of other characters, the other elements didn't really enter into it that much, except I did, like I said, take that Netherick portal from that Sabrina short. And, you know, I do think it would be fun maybe at some point to see Darla team up with Sabrina, because they are different kinds of witches. They have really different styles. Like, for me, like, I grew up in a really small, really white town, and I kind of always felt like anything that made me a little bit different, which was everything, like, honestly, just my face, that to me always felt bad, because it was what made me an outcast, or it was what made me feel isolated, or it was what made me feel alone. So I think some of that is sort of what we were exploring with Darla. She's sort of been taught, or, you know, society has taught her to think that anything about her that's different is bad, is what makes her alone. It's not what makes her powerful. And so a lot of her arc in this story is figuring out that it does make her powerful, that, you know, she can make friends, at least one friend. She makes one really good friend in the book. And that it's actually, you know, what makes her special, what makes her cool, like all of that. So I think that's what we were kind of exploring with that kind of outsider element. And, you know, someone asked me, like, well, how did you explain that she's like this quote unquote normal college student, but she's always wearing this giant cape? And they do, like, some of the other students do comment on it. Like, they just see that as part of her being weird, because she's sort of seen as like a weirdo at this school. But also, to be honest, like, at least like what I used to see on my college campus were people wearing all kinds of things. And it wasn't really a big deal, because that's sort of a time when you're exploring yourself, you're exploring your identity. I had a friend who one semester, she was an art student, and as like her art installation, she wore a pair of bunny ears for the whole semester. And it was, you know, it honestly wasn't that strange, because people were wearing all kinds of things all over campus to class. Sometimes, you know, it's just you in your pajamas. Like, so I guess I didn't really feel like that would be like that strange. But people do comment on it, just because like Darla in general is seen as such a weirdo.
Sure. Yeah. And it is like kind of also, there is a little suspension of disbelief in the Archie world as well, where it's like,
for sure,
this can happen in this like general universe, right? Like, you would not be too shocked, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like, the hijinks are through the roof. I'll say that with Archie. So, I mean, you know, we've talked about so many different things that you've worked on, and some of it's your own stuff, some of it's books, some of it's comics. Like, it feels like there's a bucket list that's just, everything's getting checked off, right? Like, it seems like you've just been able to jump into a bunch of different universes, as well as create many of your own, and that also go from genre to genre. So I'm just curious, is there something that you haven't tried yet that you've just been like, you know what, I need to do that maybe next? Anything you'd like to jump into, I guess?
You know, I think there are always things that are interesting. I think for me at this point, it's probably less about which characters, because I've gotten to write a lot of my favorite characters, or which publisher, because I've gotten to write for a lot of, you know, publishers that I grew up reading. I would like to perhaps write a longer creator-owned comic, because the only thing I've really done in that sense is actually my very first comic, which was a short in the anthology Fresh Romance. Where Ariel, who is the artist on Lois Lane, that's where we met. We were working on different stories in Fresh Romance, and I think those were actually, for both of us, those were some of our first, you know, comics thing. That was my very first comics job that I got. And I think that one was maybe 50 pages. Like, it was sort of in 10-page increments, and then we collected it. But I haven't really gone back since then to doing anything creator-owned. Everything I've done since then has been licensed, you know, someone else's sandbox, someone else's toys. So I think maybe I would like to do something like that, you know, and I'm not really in a huge rush. Like, I'm trying to be a little more, I guess, relaxed about
right.
how I allocate my time and what, you know, my career goals and all of that. But yeah, I think of all the things I haven't done yet, that's probably something that is the most interesting to me.
It is pretty interesting to me too. So I hope that this does come to be. I'm very excited, and just my brain was firing on like all cylinders just now, being like, what would that look like? So it'll be fun when it happens.
Yeah.
So also, we just talked about a ton of stuff, and obviously Darkling being like, I believe, the most recent thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, is there anything else that's coming up that you'd like to plug here? Or is there just simply, you have a lot to draw from to plug, right? So
yeah.
I guess whatever you'd like to plug.
Yeah, I don't think I have anything I can talk about yet. But I have been excited this year to sort of have a lot of things that were kind of, you know, favorite characters or bucket list things, like the Lois Lane book was certainly that. This Darkling comic has been wonderful. The X-Men was so much fun. And then the other thing I did this year, the only thing maybe we haven't talked about, is I wrote a short story for a Star Wars prose anthology. It was they've done these before. It's called From a Certain Point of View. And these anthologies basically have taken little moments from, you know, the movies, from like maybe background characters or characters whose perspective we didn't see very much. And then it's like an anthology of all of those stories written by different authors. And if you read it, it sort of takes you through the film in a different way. So this year they did one for Return of the Jedi, and I got to write something that, you know, I keep saying, like, it helped heal my childhood trauma. And I'm actually not exaggerating, because when I was doing all the interviews for Afra, a lot of people would ask me, you know, what's a memory of like Star Wars when you were growing up? And I do not know why I chose to tell this story, but every time I told this story about how when I was younger and I was watching Return of the Jedi, there's this scene near the end during the Battle of Endor where there is this Ewok who dies during the battle. And it's actually very, like, it's a very, like, lingering scene. Like, mm-hmm. he gets hit by this explosion, he falls, and then his friend is, like, trying to wake him up, and he's making, like, these really upsetting noises. And I was so upset by that when I was a kid that my mom lied to me, and she kept saying, oh no, he was fine. He just fell down. He just hurt. He got up later. I saw him fighting later. And I would always ask, you know, where? And then because this was the era of like VCRs, you couldn't like go back, you know, frame by frame as easily. So she would just say, oh, you just missed it. And I believed it. And I think I actually believed that well into adulthood. And so when they were doing this anthology, my wonderful editor on both Afra and this story, Elizabeth Schaefer, was like, do you want to write about your Ewok? And I was like, yes, I do. So I got to contribute to that anthology, the story about the dead Ewok. And, you know, spoiler alert, he doesn't come back to life. He is dead. But I think writing that story let me give him like a little bit of a better send off. Like, I think part of it was like, I always felt like, oh, they just didn't care. Like at the end, they're like celebrating, like, no one cares that he like died. Like there's no like mourning, like ballad or song or whatever. So I actually called it the Ballad of Nanta. Nanta's the Ewok, because I wanted him to have like a legacy. Like I wanted like the other Ewoks and like the rebels who he helped to like care about him. And that was a very healing experience. And a lot of the feedback I've gotten has indicated it was healing for other people too. So that was like a contribution to the Star Wars universe that I was very happy to be able to make.
Oh yeah, that's incredible. And those books are incredible. I love, love, love that stuff. The whole concept of just like, as we were talking a little bit with voices, you know, those like little like in-between stories that we never got to actually see. I love, 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 love that stuff. So yes, I'm going to have to check it out. I believe that, if I'm not incorrect about this, Daniel Page, who we just had on, also has a story in one of those. So it was just so fun to hear more about that. Thanks for sharing. But yeah, if people would like to find you online, where would you be able to be found?
you know, I have been increasingly less online, but I get, you know, if you really want to, I'm still on Twitter, X, whatever we're supposed to call it now. That's just my name, Sarah Kuhn. I'm on Instagram as Sarah Kuhn Books. And I do have a website, heroinecomplex.com, that I never update, but it is there if you want to look at it. So those are some places where you can find me sometimes, not as much recently, but sometimes.
Yeah, I love how this year, I mean, as a creator myself, we all kind of collectively went from, yeah, follow me on social media to like, if you find me on social media, that's on you.
Like, yeah, that's really, your deal. You made your choices. That's, you know, something you have to live with. But but yeah, you know, I hopefully at some point maybe I'll interact a little bit. I used to, you know, really enjoy interacting on social media. So maybe that will come back to me. We'll see. But feel free to look at whatever I have up there. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, awesome. I want to say thank you so much for taking the time today, because this was an incredible conversation. And yeah, I love your work. I'm just always looking forward to more. I hope that this creator-owned thing takes
thank
off.
Thank you.
I would love to read, you know, kind of a long-form thing that's just all your brain. That sounds great to me.
Thank you very much. Well, I you know, hopefully not all my brain, because I still need, we still need an artist to join brains with me. My brain does not work for drawing, but I would love to share a brain with someone where we can come up with something really cool.
Yes, this brain sharing. This is what I'm about. Okay, excellent. Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're listening to Bitches on Comics, distributed by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away. Find more shows like Bitches on Comics by following Realm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at realm.fm.
Thank you for listening to Bitches on Comics. We are a bi-weekly podcast where we talk to your favorite comics and pop culture creators and critics about what matters to them in comics and pop culture, as you might have guessed. You can follow us on Twitter at @BitchesOnComics and on Instagram at @BitchesOnComics. Our website is, brace yourself, bitchesoncomics.com. If you go there, you can listen to any of our episodes, and we've got other shit that we put on tabs. I don't remember what it is. I am in charge of updating the website, however, so good luck.
Thanks for the heads up. I'll go to this website now.
If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You can also support the podcast by joining us on Patreon. Head to patreon.com/queerspec to learn more.
I'm Sarah Century, and you can find me at www.sarahcentury.com and Twitter and Instagram. Still Sarah Century on those.
I'm Essie Fleenor. You can learn more about me at essiefleenor.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @SE_Fleenor.
I'm Monica Estrella Negra, and you can find me at www.audreysrevenge.com or on Twitter at @AudreyRevenge.
Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Church Fire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
Bitches on Comics is recorded in Denver, Colorado. We want to recognize the indigenous peoples who have inhabited and do inhabit this land. The Arapaho Nation, the Ute Nation, the Cheyenne Nation, and others who have been erased from our history and collective memories through colonization.